sweet potato pie and I shut my mouth. Gone.
Stay with us. On this Friday morning, Essential Technologies text line 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the program. Still to come on the program in about a half hour, we'll talk to Congressman Jerry Carl. Kick off the 10 o'clock hour from the Trustville Tribune, Scott Butcher at the bottom of the 10 o'clock hour. Then at the 11 o'clock hour, as we do every Friday, our returning champion. We hear from State Senator Chris Elliott. So please make sure you stick around for that. Joining us now on the line, very pleased to have on. He's from Huntsville, my old stomping ground, but he is also the minority leader in the Alabama House of Representatives, and probably right now the front runner for the most conservative sounding legislator in Alabama, Anthony Daniels. Leader, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. Thanks for coming on. Certainly do appreciate it. A lot of things that you've been talking about lately, and I think we got to, especially for our audience, kind of give you some props here. But you're kind of leading the charge here on taxation, I think, pro-growth policies in Alabama. And there's two in particular that I want to get to. We'll start with your idea on overtime and taking overtime kind of out of the category of taxable income. It seems to it'll eliminate a couple of things here. Obviously, you put more money back in people's pockets, but you incentivize work and you take care of some labor participation rates that are really plaguing the state. But I'll let you kind of talk about it and you know, how do we implement it?
Well, Jeff, first of all, thank you for really giving a lot of coverage to this particular issue, because it is an important issue. Right now, the state of Alabama taxes overtime pay. So if you're time and a half, whatever you make in time and a half, the state of Alabama is taking about 5% of that that goes to the state from income tax purposes. I'm proposing to eliminate that 5% so that 5% goes back to the employee. What we believe that this will do is increase participation, labor participation, but it will also encourage more of the existing workforce to work overtime, because you're removing that 5% tax, and it gives them an opportunity to be able to take home more money. Given where we are with the economy and the increase in price in goods and services, it's the right thing to do. Even beyond that, and once we get back to a point of some normalcy, it'll give working families an opportunity, working men and women opportunity to be able to make more money without any type of mandate of an increase in minimum wage. And also for an employer, it increases productivity, because every four employees that works 10 hours of overtime basically perform at the rate of five employees. And so it's a no-brainer. It increases productivity from a business standpoint, reduces their overhead for around G&A and benefits, but it also puts them at or above ahead of schedule, so that eventually the products that they're producing will start to see a reduction in the demand, and also increase in prices. So we'll see a reduction in prices overall, because we'll be producing at the rate that we should be producing.
And you know, what has been the reception to this? Because I'm kind of asking lawmakers about it on the Republican side. These are very interesting proposals. I want to hear more about them. Are you getting the positive reception from your colleagues on the other side of the aisle?
I am. I actually dropped the bill yesterday, and I had both party properly, you know, the leadership in the House, the Speaker, and the budget chairman, the Education Trust Fund budget chairman, Representative Andy Witt, Representative Budget Chairman for General Fund, Rex Reynolds, you know, and other Ben Harris and other legislators that are from both Democrat and Republican side of the aisle are co-sponsors of this piece of legislation.
So that's huge, hey, getting that support on both sides. I guess the logical question would be, well, what about upstairs in the Senate? Have you gotten any feedback on it from that group?
Well, Senator Sam Duvan, I believe, probably dropped the bill yesterday in the Senate. He's the Senate sponsor of the bill. I think I've not necessarily had as much engagement with senators besides Senator Duvan, but I'm very pleased that, you know, a lot of your audiences, that your listeners, and listeners across the state of Alabama have been reaching out to their representatives. And so it applied a lot of pressure in the House of Representatives. And now it's time to repeat the same thing in the Senate.
Well, that's
to gain more support in the Senate.
It's impressive because, you had the idea and you put it out there, and now it's catching on. The other thing you kind of lead the charge on, Representative, I think, at least in the early stages here, was the grocery tax. And, I mean, there was a lot of apprehension from my good friends on the Republican side of the aisle. But you just said, no, we just need to do something here. And you got kind of an interesting idea. Let's do let's float a trial balloon here, see how it works. Let's test it out, maybe for a month, and see if it really does impact revenues like a lot of people say it would.
Absolutely, Jeff. And what I'm seeing is, and what all of us are experiencing at the grocery stores, is certainly higher than normal prices. The state of Alabama may have been collecting 20 cents. If eggs was $2 two, 3 years ago, and they're hovering in some places, especially in the deep rural areas where there's a significant, a smaller bump than regular in your urban and suburban areas at the grocery store, is about $8. And so the state of Alabama, for when it was $2, you're the state was taking in 20 cents as a whole, that city, county, and state taxes, about 20 cents in most municipalities that may have a 10 cents tax rate. But the state takes 4 cents of the 10 cents. And so now you're bringing in 80 cents. And so, of course, your budgets are going to be growing at a higher rate because of those prices. But at the end of the day, where with the grocery tax, every item in the grocery store won't be untaxed. It is the essential items and items that of a necessity that they're proposing. And my thing is, those individuals that feel that is going to be a significant burden on the budget versus those that said we need to do it anyway, to be able to have a happy medium, I'm proposing that we take the month of June. And Jeff, the month of June, all of our young people are K through 12 out of school, right? And so I have two small children at home, and they certainly eat a lot during those particular months. And so my grocery bills are significantly higher in June. And then you're looking at December, where families are purchasing gifts for loved ones. Santa Claus is coming in and bringing some things for our young people. But it'll give some relief to those families where that child will be out 2 weeks, but it'll also give the family some relief to be able to spend on those items that they deem necessary for their children. So those are the 2 months where I think families experience the most, spend the most money in groceries in general. And so let's test it out. Let's take June of 2023 and do a month-long elimination of the grocery tax with the SNAP definition and see and look, compare it to FY 2022, June, 2021, 2020, and let's do a comparison to see if, in fact, our theory is correct that our tax receipts are going to be reduced by a certain amount. I, for one, don't believe that is accurate, but for those individuals that may be on one side or the other of this issue, let's test it out and get the data and see what's true and what's not, and let's move forward from there.
And something else, you and I were talking about this after the state of the state, that, you're paying more for a dozen eggs now, right? Significantly more. And since we tax at a percentage, because of inflation, it's not a good thing by any means, any stretch of the imagination, but as far as tax revenue go, you're going to bring in more tax revenues just because you have higher prices.
Absolutely. And that's a no-brainer. Some think that, eventually the economy will be, we'll start to see a reduction in those costs, but we'll never get back to $2 of getting 20 cents, right? We'll never get back to that point. At the very best, we'll probably hover around $4 or $5. And so I don't see it. So then, even at $4 or $5, you're taking in 50 cents or 40 cents, right? On the same item 2 years ago that you were bringing in 20 cents. So it's you're still going to see a significant increase in revenue from a budgetary standpoint. But at the end of the day, we should also, Jeff, be focusing on incentivizing local farmers to be able to produce a lot of the essential items that we're talking about, so that then local farmers will be able to collaborate with local grocery stores and local convenience stores on selling some of these items directly, direct. And so that way, we'll be able to start having influence on driving down the cost because of the competition.
Joined by House Minority Leader Anthony Daniels here on the program. Leader, something else you and I were talking about, and it's all these obstacles to the workplace. And, you, today even the workforce participation rate, it's up slightly, but unemployment at 2.5%. The problem, I assume you hear this a lot, is just finding enough workers for all the job openings. So you look at the barriers to employment, and obviously work, you know, the skills and all of that. We got a pretty good solution in place there with the two-year college system. I guess we're working on mental health with, you know, getting past the drug testing and that aspect of it. But something else you and I were talking about is it's like a child care. And maybe it's time to start trying to think, like, well, I mean, the government can't do it all, obviously. Should we try to figure out a way to get these big businesses, especially the ones we're bringing in with all these incentives, to have a little bit of buy-in into the system?
Absolutely. What we're beginning to see now is there's a conversation that's starting in the legislature, particularly with Manufacturer Alabama and other partners that are seeing significant interruption in the workforce participation. And so one of the main primary reasons is child care and access to child care. And so what we're doing now is looking at a bill to provide possibly a provider tax credit for those that are providers for child care facilities. And sometimes, you know, from an industry standpoint, the business, the company may not want to put a child care center as a part of their company, but they may contract out with a provider that wants to occupy their facility at their location to provide child care for families. And so those are some of the things that we're looking at. Incentivizing companies that want to go and help become partners in this area, as well as help those providers that are already providing the service currently to be able to expand.
Yeah, and because just speaking personally, and I don't know what it's like in Huntsville, but I mean, like a year waiting list just to get on a daycare here in Baldwin County. It's not having the means to pay for it. It's just the availability of child care at an early age, it doesn't seem to be there in a lot of places around Alabama.
You're correct. And Jeff, I've been talking to the Department of Early Childhood, which they're focusing on this issue, been focusing on it for a couple of years. And then kudos to the governor for expanding access to pre-K, which is certainly a benefit to our state. But even earlier than that, I've been talking about birth to pre-K for a number of years, and early childhood has been talking about the same thing. And so we all kind of got to start communicating with each other. I also met with some of the folks that have been focusing on the AAA Accountability Act and asking them to start shifting some of their focus to birth to pre-K in the child care area. So we're providing that service, and also it increases the quality of education. I could tell you when I was a third grade teacher, I could tell you every child in my classroom that went to school before kindergarten based upon their academics and behavior. And so if we know that every dollar that's invested in early childhood saves you $7 in corrections, then we should be focusing on that. And so it's a no-brainer from a number of different angles.
Well, real quickly, we just got a couple more minutes here, Leader. Hearing all this talk from Republicans and the governor about education, well, how do you feel about it? What do you think? What would you like to see done to, since this is going to be one of the bigger pushes of this year, of this session, what would you like to see done?
Well, I applaud, Representative Collins and our colleagues, Drummond and others that have been focusing on the Literacy Act and the Numeracy Act. I applaud them on their efforts there. I think that in order to really make everything a reality, we have to focus on cradle to pre-K, mixed delivery system, working with churches, working with private daycares, nonprofits, and for-profit daycares to be able to provide the service on the front end, because that increases, it gives us the ability to increase the rigor from the K-12 aspect. Then also pathways. Right now we're seeing young people in middle school is where we're losing a lot of our young people out of elementary school. where we got to start talking about career in the middle school area and create pathways. There are some places in the country that may have a public health track or an engineering track or some other tracks where in the high school you'll go through one of those particular tracks based upon your interest from middle school all the way through career. And the likelihood and the increase in graduation rates increase significantly in places that have done this. But also talk to our higher education institutions, making certain that we're growing our own. We're doing everything that we can to produce graduates that actually stay in the state of Alabama. Until all of those sectors start having conversations, Jeff, we're going to be having the same conversation 10 years from now about what we should be doing and what we could be doing. We got to communicate and we got to get it done.
Leader, we're up against the break, but you've been very generous with your time this morning, and hopefully before it's all said and done, this session, we get you on again real soon.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jeff, for what you do, and I certainly appreciate your listeners for calling and reaching out to their House members and also their senators to push this overtime tax across the finish line.
Hey, we're happy to do so. House Minority Leader Anthony Daniels, ladies and gentlemen, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Ooh, Montgomery.
Right up over Spanish Fort into Mobile, my hometown. Mr. T.